Welcome to the Pocket Coven podcast, where magic meets mental health. I'm Amber Lenore, a witch and licensed psychotherapist.
I'm Callie Little, a sex educator and emotional support witch, and we're
the coven in your pocket. All right, I think I got it to work now.
Hello. It's not an episode of the Pocket Coven podcast if we don't start with 1,000 technical issues that are different every single week.
Being an amateur is amateur hour every week.
Yeah. Yes. But, you know, the alternative is spending even more money to learn more skills so that we can earn money to pay off learning skills.
Yeah. The great life, death, and rebirth cycle.
Which brings us to our topic this week of the hero's journey, also known as tarot.
Yes. We want to talk about the ways that tarot can help us evolve our sense of self.
Self through the lens of tarot.
Yeah. Self-development, self-awareness, self-work, the work, the great work.
Self-worship.
Also that doesn't hurt when you're trying to evolve yourself.
Agreed. And, you know, if that sounds delicious to you, go and give our self-worship episode featuring Cordelia Rose Black a listen. I came into my witchcraft mainly through self-worship and tarot. Like, I started kind of praying to myself, my higher self. And initially, I was using tarot to have a conversation with that part of me. And that's still what I do.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, was how has using tarot helped you develop your sense of self?
I think that because of like having the amount of time that I've been using it, I can look back and be like, oh my God, I really did know. Like it's one of those things where you do have to take the leap of trusting yourself first. And then you can look back and say, no, I was feeling my intuition. I was really aware of what was going on. When you're very first starting, it can feel like you're in the dark because you don't have any proof that this system is going to work for you. But that's why I love having a tarot journal. You know, I go in and out of having them, but you can just look back on it and be like, oh yeah, that reading led to this thing in my life.
Yeah, exactly. I think most of us start reading tarot by pulling a random card or pulling random cards with a prompt like the Celtic Cross or, you know, past, present, future. And that's fine. My tarot practice definitely started with really just the major arcana. I had a deck that I gave to my daughter, but I had it when I was a teen that was just the majors, no minors. So I didn't really know the minors until much later. And the way that I used it is in that sort of random way. Like, I'm going to pull a card and then, oh, this means something spooky, you know, like that was about the extent of my relationship with tarot. It wasn't until much later that I started using tarot as a process for self-work or self-development, self-awareness practice. And that looks much more intentional. And that's mostly why I wanted to make this episode, is so that, one, we can talk about tarot because we fucking love it, right?
Yeah.
And two, so that people can learn different structures for using tarot that are incredibly fucking empowering. Like, tarot is such a complete map of human experiences. Every card in the tarot is either a situation or an archetype related to all human experiences, regardless of culture or class or anything. They're super universal. So when you learn a structure, then you have a greater capacity to utilize the cards for really what they're for. I think they're so much better utilized as a tool of self-development rather than of divination, personally.
Yeah. That, I wouldn't have expected you to say that.
Really? Why not? Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, I would absolutely expect you to say that they are a tool for self-evaluation, self-reflection, mm-hmm. but to say even more so than divination, mm-hmm. I just know your intimacy with magic and your tarot practice. And maybe you divine as self, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, for me as a human, as just Amber, divination and self-development are not different. Yeah. They're parallel processes that are happening. Yeah. For listeners and for the general public, I want to make a distinction because I don't think that everyone's practicing that way. And I think yeah. that most folks are practicing in a divinatory way, right? They're divining with the cards, mm. as in to say they're trying to predict the future or they're trying to predict yeah. outcome. And to me, self-awareness practice through tarot is an act of divining in that my awareness of self gives me a capacity to move in the direction I want to. And it is the same as divining, right? Like instead yeah. of predicting the future, I am creating the future through tarot.
Yeah, I like that. And I think you're right. Most people that, you know, come to me for like a tarot reading, for example, they are looking at it much more as divination, as in I'm pulling a card and the universe has a message and that's the only thing that's happening.
Yeah.
And I forget that that's the case for a lot of people because they are one and the same for me. So I agree with you. I think I was just hearing it differently. But so, and I think this always surprises people when they ask me about like getting readings. I've never in my life done a Celtic cross. I've never had one read for me. I've never done one because to me, I don't want to have to go through a lot of steps and feel like I'm going to forget something with my tarot practice. And that's not at all to say that I think there's anything wrong with it. I would love to get one done. I would love to play around with it sometime. But it's just not been what's drawn me. I really like the more intuitive 1 to 3 card pulls. Those are my go-tos.
Yeah, same. I don't use a whole lot of prescribed prompts. I like some that I've heard through Amanda Yates Garcia, Sarah Faith Gottesdiener, and Lindsay Mack, those top three. I mean, they're my favorites, period. I mention them all the time. And they all have like really nice prompts and structures, which can be fun. For the most part, when I'm reading for clients, like with my therapy clients, if they're not really sure what they want to work on, I'll often say, do you want me to get a tarot deck? We could work with that. And I'll have them tell me what's going on about, you know, like what's happening in their life, right? And then based on what's happening in their life, we'll co-create a structure to work with the tarot. So I'm dealing with themes of hope and fear, let's say. Great. Mm-hmm. Let's pull a card for hope. Let's pull a card for fear. And let's pull a third one that's just like a guide, like who mm-hmm. can support you. You know what I mean? That's just like an example of a more improvisational. But, mm-hmm. you know, today we're going to talk about using something called tarot grids, which is taking the major arcana meaning divine secrets, the arcane.
Oh, I didn't know that's what arcana meant.
Yeah, the arcana means secrets. So mm-hmm. they're like the big keys, as Paul Foster Case calls them, the big thresholds that unlock self-development. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll be talking about that. But before we're going to talk about that, we are going to riff more casually about how our processes personally have moved with tarot or through tarot.
Yeah. I think that, you know, as we were preparing for this episode, I was thinking about how we've just completed, really. I feel like we really have completed the Hermit card, because even though we're not out of the woods quite yet with the pandemic, we have turned the page. We are officially moving toward resolution.
Yeah.
And what is the card after the Hermit?
After the Hermit is the Wheel of Fortune. The Hermit is all about the interior journey. I've gone within. I have let my inner flame guide me through some sort of underworld journey. and the Wheel of Fortune is all about, I'm going to let the process work now. Now yep. I'm stepping out of the role of author of my own story, and I'm going to let the universe respond to what I just did, you know? And I definitely feel like we're right there. It's kind of time to, you know, Jesus, take the wheel kind of moment. Like, go ahead, take me on this trip. Here's where we're going to go into the future. We don't know what that looks like, but the dark night of the soul has passed, it seems, at least for the moment.
Yeah. And I do think there's a bit of the feeling of the Wheel of Fortune with, you know, getting vaccinated. Amber and I have both had our second vaccines. Amber had literally fucking no symptoms, which is so cool for you.
Nothing, not a damn thing.
I was more sick than I've maybe ever been in my life for exactly 24 hours, and then I was 100% fine. So it wasn't the worst, but we're both very pro-vax. This yeah. podcast is pro-vax. We hope that if your body is capable of it and you have the resources, that you are getting the vaccination. Mm-hmm. Everybody who wants it deserves it. And it does feel like the Wheel of Fortune. Like, yes, you just got to let it do its thing. And you also, there's trust involved. It is a bit of a trust fall. The Wheel of Fortune says, okay, you got things spinning in the right direction. Trust that it's going to work out. And also, you got to come out of that shell to spin the wheel, you know?
You do. You do indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in addition to thinking about our kind of global state of coming out of the hermit, Amber, you are like about to complete a cycle of the hero's journey.
I am about to complete a cycle and start a new cycle. And before I talk about that, I want to quickly, for our listeners, remind them of what the hero's journey cycle is. We have a protagonist. The protagonist is in their normal world, the world as they know it. There is something that happens. There is a call to action. They meet a mentor. They go on a quest. They go into usually a deep, dark cave or an underworld journey. They slay a dragon. They have a long journey home. They meet all sorts of friends and foes and allies and challenges on the way. This is the most classic story structure. It comes from Joseph Campbell. It is used as a container for a lot of things, for storytelling, certainly. Cross-culturally, this is a really common narrative. It's used for developmental psychology or depth psychology to help people move through trauma or move through change. And the tarot, the major arcana, the 22 cards, mirror the hero's journey from the fool, the cosmic child, all the way to the world. And we'll talk again more concretely about all of those steps in a bit. But yeah, as a person, I am wrapping up a cycle that was rooted in me working for other people, which is really common. Most of us don't work for ourselves. And in a place where I was trying to kind of, I don't know, how do I describe it? Like, the image that's coming up for me is just building, like brick by brick by brick, right? So like, okay, go to grad school, graduate from grad school, now I'm post-grad. Okay, now there's more clinical hours, just like building and building and building. And during that building process, I was working in the nonprofit sector and nonprofit circus, and I was working for a group practice in Olympia, Washington, which is a wonderful group practice. And I knew that it was always my plan to move into private practice eventually, to be my own boss. Private practice is like, it's like tantamount to when you get rid of a cat and you send them off to a farm to be with other cats, you know, like,
I think that's just a nice story you tell children.
Well, yeah, but it's real. It's like, oh yeah, that therapist went off into private practice and they went, you know, happily into the sunset, which doesn't mean that it's free of challenge at all. It's definitely difficult to be your own boss. And also that was my big goal, was I want to be in this place where I am building and learning and resourcing and trying and failing and getting there and getting there. And now I'm here. So I have been successful enough in this building process to have a completely built house, live in it, and move away, you know, symbolically. And tarot has helped me move through that process so much, so much. I really reignited my passion for tarot when I started graduate school in 2015. And looking to the cards for guidance, looking at the cards as a developmental process, gave me so much permission to get through a really difficult building period. Every step of this journey, I have felt like, I just want to get there. I just want to get there. I just want to get there. I just want to get there for fucking years, like halfway through grad school. Oh my God, there's two more years. Can I do it? Can I do it? It's been 6 years. This has been a 6-year cycle of becoming a completely different person. A story that was inappropriate for the pod just came up, but just about like where I was at right before I started this cycle, it was also in a death process or, you know, like ready to be reborn. So now I'm about to be the fool again, going into a brand new cycle.
I mean, there are so many cycles happening for you all at the same time. Mm-hmm. You are the mother of a 17 and a half year old.
Oh yeah. There's that too. Yeah.
You're about to be an empty nester before the age of 40, which is so exciting.
I have always been stoked that I had a baby early. I mean, warning, don't do that. It's hard. But if you also do that, fine, that's great. That's the cool part about being a witch. If you do or you don't, it's on you. but yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I was thinking of, you know, when you said, oh, you're just completing a cycle, I was thinking like professionally, but it's also true. Cycles upon cycles upon cycles. I am moving through a nearly 20-year cycle of becoming a new mother and really coming into myself, which was not one coming into. It was just over and over and over. And it will be until I die. And there's a very big difference between being a 20-year-old new mother and being a 38-year-old woman who is very self-possessed and can take care of her damn self and is about to launch a big-ass grown child.
A like 5'11" child.
She's fucking huge. She's like enormous. How dare she be so tall?
Also, she's just like a tall, beautiful blonde goddess who looks like an Instagram model.
She looks like Athena.
She does.
Doesn't she? Yeah. Ugh.
Anyway, this is now an Olivia fan podcast. But you had started this whole hero's journey, you know, 20 years ago. And when you are at that cusp, you know, when you do turn that page, it will have been 21 years. It will have been the Arcana cycle.
Yes. Yes. So there's 22 cards in the major Arcana. If you take the Fool out, you have 21. And
why would you take the Fool out though?
Oh yeah. Cause the Fool is the archetype of all of us. It is the universal self. It is the core self. It's the one who goes on the journey.
We are always the Fool.
We are always the Fool. Yes. Yes. I mean, how about you? Where are you at in the hero's journey cycle?
I just made so many faces. Yeah. I don't know where I'm at. You know, I feel like so much in my life, I've really known who I am identity wise. And right now I feel like I'm kind of in a transitional period. Oh, the birds are chirping outside. So I'm not sure about the part of myself that is unrelated to my work, but my work life, my work self has really changed this year. I feel like maybe the past year has been actually the Wheel of Fortune in terms of my career. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm moving into a new part of that. And that feels really exciting. I'm not sure exactly where I'm at in the deck right now. Although, fuck it. We have a deck right here. Let's pull a card.
All right, let's find out.
Let's just pull a card.
Okay. You want to do it? Yeah, let's just do it the way I do it with clients.
Do it.
So I'm going to ask you to shuffle the deck, and I'm going to hold your microphone. Yeah. Live. Tarot.
ASMR.
ASMR.
I'm going to do three
reshuffles because that's my go-to when I'm not doing it with as much time as I usually like to take. That was the worst shuffle. They didn't even touch. All right, here we go. And then, you want me to cut?
Sure.
You gotta feel it in your gut, you know?
Yeah. Callie's feeling the cards in her gut. Her eyes are looking at the ceiling. Her tongue is moving. It's amazing. Okay, so now I have my cards in front of Callie, and I'm going to move the cards one at a time. And when I touch the card that is for you, you'll know, and you'll tell me which one it is.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right, hang on. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to close my eyes for this because...
But you have to see.
I have to see.
You have to look at the cards.
Oh, are you showing me the face?
No.
Oh, you're just showing me the back.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's what I thought you were doing. All right. I'll play by your rules.
Okay.
Pause. Yeah, the one you just pulled.
The Wheel of Fortune.
Oh!
Oh, my fucking God!
Burn the witch.
That's so fucked up. That's so funny. So, whoa. Like, the therapist in me just thinks that tarot is just a really smart and practical device for self-development. The witch in me is like, this shit works. This shit works. This is fucked up. This is so spooky.
I love doing things live because then you get this amazing thing. Wow, this is a beautiful card, too.
Yeah.
So this is the Ethereal Visions tarot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The figure on it actually looks very much like the hermit.
It does.
You can't see any part of them except for their hands because they're just cloaked. And the traditional figures of the Wheel of Fortune are in the background. So you have the lion and the eagle, the bull, and I don't know, the virgin, I'm going to say. And the figure in the front is holding the Wheel of Fortune. Well, I guess that is where I'm at. I'm in that trusting place of just having... I am in career limbo where I'm about to move to the next stage. And I don't really know exactly what that means yet, but it's exciting. So, you know, stay tuned, y'all. Big things are in the works.
Callie's doing some cool shit, and we should all be holding space and energy for that because it's going to be awesome.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
So, how do we do... Tarot gridding.
Tarot grids. Here we go. I still have goosebumps from that pull. That was cool.
That was wild.
That was very cool. Whenever Callie and I do magic together, it's really amplified. Like really, really spooky shit happens every time.
Yeah.
Tarot grids are a way of organizing the major arcana. There's different ways. You pull all of the 22 out of your deck. There's a Joseph Campbell one that's like a 5-card, or I think it's a 4-card grid. Whatever. We're not talking about that one. The one that I like the most, that most people I've learned from, and a lot of theorists and thinkers, Carl Jung in particular, used it this way, is to make 3 lines of 7, taking the Fool out. Remember, the Fool is the one who goes on the journey. So we start with the Magician and we move through the Chariot. Then we start again on the 2nd line with Strength through Temperance. And then we begin the 3rd line with the Devil and we end at the World. Yeah.
Because you got to beat the big bad to get to the end.
Yeah, yeah, you do. When organized this way, we see a structure for the conscious mind, the unconscious mind, and the collective conscious or the integrated consciousness. We also see life, death, and rebirth cycles. So the 1st line of the tarot is very ego-based. So we have really big archetypes, like the Magician is like a child, right? They're incredibly egocentric, but that's their job. That's not a bad thing about them, mm-hmm. right? They're supposed to be ego-driven. They're interested in will and power and knowing thyself and using what's around them to make magic. Then we move to the High Priestess, which represents the unconscious mind, which is after conscious mind, right? Then we move to the archetypal mother, the archetypal father, the archetypal teacher, the self and other in the love. We don't actually start to see anything other than just one figure until we get to the Chariot. Then we have a figure that is in motion, that is moving away, that is going into the second line of the tarot. So you can see it as this evolution process. When you have crossed one threshold, then you're ready to see the next one, step by step by step, kind of like a baby grows into a toddler, grows into a child, grows into an adolescent, grows into an adult. The deconstruction of the ego that's formed in the first line starts to happen in the second line. So in the second line, you know, strength starts us out with like, yeah, I know who I am. I have mastered that inner beast. I know how to be with my carnal instincts, and I know how to be with challenge, right? And then we start to go on this internal journey because the self asks to die and be reborn. This is really normal. I mean, look at nature. It's happening constantly around us. It's a very natural, dare I say, process, right? And in the second line, we go through the Hanged Man, right? We don't know what we want anymore. We thought we knew who we were. We don't. We go through a death process. Death is not the end of the major arcana. It's the middle. We meet an ally, an angel, an alchemist at the very end who's like, hey, we're going to start to transform. And after that, then we meet the fucking devil. That's Al Pacino from Devil's Advocate. I'm the fucking devil. One person's going to laugh at that.
You meet Al Pacino.
Then you meet Al Pacino and you're Keanu Reeves. you know, the devil's all about confronting fear and the bondage you put yourself in, really, really necessary for rebirth. Like rebirth process starts with really confronting your shit. I'm in my devil year this year. My birthday year is the devil. And I'm definitely doing some very big devil work. You know, the tower is in the third line where everything that didn't serve you mm-hmm. fucking has to go. But you got to be at the devil first. You have to really see your bondage first to ever remove yourself from it. You know, then we get some kind of good vibes in the third line. It's not all dark. We have the sun and the moon, you know, the reminder of spring to come. And then, you know, we got the final judgment, this like very biblical card that's all about the dead rising up. Like the way I've heard that described is like all the old selves are like coming back for integration, which is so cool, right? And then we get to the world. And then it's time to start all over again. So we move through these lines over and over and over. Yeah. What do you think about that as I'm describing it?
I was just thinking about how we have like multiple versions of the hero's journey happening in our lives all at the same time. You know, we have the great plot of our life. So I'm only 31 years in to the grand scheme of my life. And who knows what the rest of it looks like? Who knows how long it is? I have been through the hero's journey before. Mm-hmm. I am in the middle of it now. I'm at the end of it now. I'm at the beginning of it now. You know, we're always at all of these different points because your identity is in a different place than your career. And your family is in a different place than your identity. So I think that the reason, you know, that you can look at any card and you can say, well, of course that makes sense. Like that's a universal human experience. Yeah, no shit. That's literally the point. That's literally exactly what this deck is. It's saying, look, this is the part of your life that's coming up right now because we are always going through everything. We are always becoming and finishing and thriving and suffering.
Absolutely, yes. We are always doing this. When I say that we do it all over again, that doesn't mean that we start at zero. We're not a novice. We're not a baby again. Mm-hmm. We are a new self that is an integration of all the other selves. Like they're with us for every new cycle we begin. I am not opposed to using tarot in a way that is more random or just trying to let the spooky vibes flow. Clearly we like that. If you just like it, and it does that. It speaks to you. You get repeating cards, you get weird shit like what just happened between me and Callie, yep. where Callie's like, I think I'm in the Wheel of Fortune, and then she pulls the Wheel of Fortune. Like that happens all the time. And these are arcane secrets. So if you use them intentionally, yeah. you can unlock those secrets. Like these are really, really old ancient archetypes from 14 whatever in a whole different part of the world. Yeah. It's so cool. And I see that people are opposed to that because in some ways, if they don't understand all of this, it feels like, well, doesn't that defeat the purpose? Isn't it supposed to be this like just thing that happens to you, right? And we rail against this. It is exactly. It's still happening to you. Like magic isn't less magical if there's some intentionality around it. It's not.
And life is not less meaningful if you have slightly more insight. You know, it's kind of like you wouldn't go to a museum and be like, well, this painting is ruined because right below it is a label that says what year it was done.
Exactly.
Nah, like the cards are not going to tell you exactly what's going to happen. You can't, you know, one of the common things that a lot of tarot readers say is like, I will not predict death or birth. And that's fucking fair because, first of all, that's fortune telling.
Right.
And secondly, you don't go to the cards looking for hyper specificity. I mean, you can play around with it for sure. Have the relationship with your cards you want, but they're major points of your life and they're also minor points of your life. They're not.
Yeah. You know, as you were saying that, I was thinking of like the readings I've done for my daughter's friends where they're like, okay, I want to know if I should break up with my boyfriend. And I'm like, it doesn't really say things like that. It's more like, is this person a healthy relationship for me? And they're like, yeah, whatever, yeah, Amber.
But then you pull the devil.
Then I pull the devil, right? You know, but they're like so bored of that like self-development talk. They're like, yeah, I just want to know the future. And I'm like, well, the best way to know the future is to reflect the present.
But for folks who don't want to do that work, you can easily frame that work in like tarot readings.
You can. You absolutely can. So I have an excerpt from 78 Degrees of Wisdom. It's Rachel Pollack. So this is what she says about the grid process. The division into three allows us to see the major arcana as dealing with three distinct areas of experience. Briefly, we can call these consciousness, the outer concerns of life in society, subconscious, or the search inward to find who we really are, and superconsciousness, the development of a spiritual awareness and a release of archetypal energy. The three levels are not forced categories. They derive from the cards themselves. That, to me, that wisdom that I have the ability to organize my experiences using tarot cards is just so meaningful mm-hmm. and so magical. So another little excerpt here about the first line, because I'd like to dig in more to what these lines mean, right? And how we can pull some wisdom there mm-hmm. for self-development. So she says, the first line with its concentration on such matters as love, social authority, and education describe the main concerns of society. In many ways, the world we see mirrored in our novels, films, and schools is summed up by the first seven cards of the major arcana.
Oh, true.
Right? Yeah. Like the mother, the father, the teacher, the lover, all of those things. So how do you think that just working with the first line of the tarot, let's say, the ego formation, consciousness, society, like what wisdom is there? Like what can we understand about ourselves from that first line?
That's a really good question. I was thinking about this actually, about kind of the concept of the baby witch, because, you know, there are a lot of folks on the internet right now who are like, oh, witchcraft is just, people are trending it and it's going to be thrown away and it's disrespectful. Listen, if you don't already know, we are not about gatekeeping here on this podcast. Witchcraft is for whoever the fuck wants. That's it, period. And if you are aware of, you know, respecting closed traditions, you're working on not being a colonizing piece of shit, then we support you joining the witchcraft brigade. And you have to be the fool and the magician to be a baby witch. You have to go into it with enough boldness to move past the fool and into the magician. You have to make use of what's around you. And the magician is all about that. And then what do you transcend into from there? The high priestess, who is, I mean, fucking everybody loves the high priestess.
I love her. She's my favorite, of course.
Right. You're the high priestess and I'm the empress. These are our two main archetypes.
It's
right?
True. Yeah.
And I was thinking about how we do tend to move through those things. In anything we get really invested in, and the idea of teachers came up for me. Teachers, you know, learning, being transformed, really mastering something, mm-hmm. and then becoming a nurturer of that, and then getting jaded and becoming very structured, like the emperor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Nobody likes daddy.
I've learned to like the emperor. The emperor is my birth card. That's a whole other episode in the making at this moment, I'm sure. But, you know, the emperor from like Lindsay Mack's perspective, Tarot from the Wild Soul, is just such a great container for learning tarot, very trauma informed. And she talks about the healthy masculine. Like, what does healthy masculinity look like? It is a great big mountain. It is a sturdy tree. Yeah. It is a safe home. You know, structure is really important. And I've had to learn positive reframes, one, to be able to see my birth card in any kind of way that is advantageous to me. I was like, oh, I'm the emperor. I hate that. oh, I hate being daddy, but I definitely am, for sure. You know, the emperor takes care of their community if they're in their healthy, exalted form. We're all aware of how poisonous empire is, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of new tarot theory that is deconstructing the more classic Rider-Waite because it's a symbol of its times. You know, it's very institutional, very religious in some ways. So I think that there is something to learn from the emperor and, I mean, literally every card in the tarot, just different lessons. That's the gift of it, right? And I think that the first line really gives us permission to be a beginner. It reminds us that our identity and sense of self is really, really important. Yeah. And the second line teaches us that it has to be dismantled. Before that dismantling, we need to have a nice solid base to build anything from. And when we're trying to change, a lot of us want to go from I have the idea of change to I have done the change. And it doesn't work like that. We have so many different processes we need to go through to get to change. Yeah. And one of them is having any kind of solid foundation. Before I do any sort of trauma-focused work with a client, for instance, we need to have a relationship. They need to know me. I need to know them. That's like very first line of the tarot. Mm-hmm. We are getting to know the major themes of your self-work. We are figuring each other out. Okay, now we have safety. We know who we are. Now we're the chariot. We're moving into the second line to just deconstruct all of that and go through some ego death.
Yeah, the second line really is ego death, isn't it?
It is. Rachel Pollack says, modern depth psychology concerns itself with the second line of the trumps. I know. It's okay. I know. They're called trump cards. It just means triumph. One card triumphs over the
other. Triumph cards.
Triumph cards. Here we go. Well, let me try that again then. Modern depth psychology concerns itself with the second line of the triumphs, with their symbols of a hermit-like withdrawal into self-awareness, followed by a symbolic death and rebirth. The angel of temperance at the end represents the part of ourselves which we discover to be essentially real after the illusions of ego, defensiveness, and rigid habits of the past are allowed to die away. Yeah.
That's a tough place to get to. It takes a lot of work to get there.
It does. Rachel Pollack also says that most Western thinkers will never make it to the third line of the tarot. Because Western society is extremely individualistic and ego-based.
Yeah.
And we are not supported nor encouraged to go through ego death. We make very poor consumers when we are deconstructing and reconstructing our sense of self.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they don't really want that from us. So, you know, spirituality and spiritual awareness is not very revered under capitalism.
No, there's a reason that we are the weirdos.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't, I mean, I feel like a Hot Topic t-shirt right now, but you know, we don't follow the rules that are set forth by society in general. And that is always frowned upon. The reason that the systems we have stayed in power for so long is because they're so deeply shaming of anyone who doesn't fall in line. And that is what it is. It's falling in line because capitalism, it's one of those words that just, I know it immediately turns folks off because who the fuck doesn't know about how shitty capitalism is, but it's a regime.
Yeah, it is.
And it shits on people who don't support it by ostracizing them. So if you are pursuing spiritual enlightenment of any kind, everybody's going to be really fucking uncomfortable with you because how dare you betray the system that they are slaving away at?
Yeah. And the creators of the Rider-Waite Tarot were weirdos who were in the Golden Dawn. You know, they were hermetic practitioners of magic who wanted to move away from the structures too. So the way that they organized tarot, because really it's occultists who made the tarot what it is. Like we covered that in our first episode. Yes, it started as a playing deck of cards similar to bridge, but over time it was occultists who evolved the practice. And it's occultists and witches now who are continuing to evolve the deck, who are continuing to have a more modern, more progressive, more intersectional, more queer, more black, really representing what we're trying to change now. Whereas the Rider-Waite is representing what was being disassembled at the time. But the process, apart from the content of it, is to me what the medicine is. That you can take that process and you can put it anywhere and it can work.
Yeah, it has to keep evolving because people keep evolving. Mm-hmm. And tarot has always been punk.
Yeah, it always has been. So on the last line of the tarot, Rachel Pollack says, finally, what of the last line? What can go beyond finding our true selves? To put it simply, these seven cards depict a confrontation and finally a unity with the great forces of life itself. The other cards, formerly seen as so important, become merely the preparation for the great descent into darkness, the liberation of light, and the return of that light to the sunlit world of consciousness.
Mm. We should all hope that the people we put in charge of community care, such as politicians, do any fucking work in that third line.
Oh, no, they're not going to do that. That's not good for them. That's not.
They got to stay in the seven.
Money, please. They're going to be staying right in fucking Hierophant, Emperor, they're right there. Right there. Structure and teaching structure.
And when you get stuck in ego, you can't integrate.
No. And if you don't have any ego, you can't integrate either. So it's a balance between the both.
You know, slight sidebar.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that comes up a lot in client sessions with me is folks saying like, you know, I feel like it's really egotistical of me to think X, Y, Z. I feel like I'm being so egocentric. And you have to have an ego.
Yeah, your ego is really important. A healthy ego is really vital. Being obsessed with how horrible you are is one way to be egotistical.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That is a wounded ego. And hating yourself is just as toxic, not only to yourself, but also to other people, as thinking that you're the single most important being in everybody's universe.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people don't understand that theory very well.
Yeah.
You know, popular media, just like, oh, the ego, like they don't know where it comes from, right? There's the ego, there's the id, there's the super ego. The ego is the one who balances between the super ego, who's like, I'm going to rule everything. And the id who's like, I'm baby, you know, between I'm baby and I'm daddy, right? We need a healthy intermediate.
Yeah.
Who's like, you're not baby. but listen, you don't get to be in charge of everything, right? A healthy ego can balance those things. Yeah. It's not that we want the absence of ego. We want a healthy ego. A healthy yes. ego knows who they are, so much so that you can be different. Because I know who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think what we see a lot is I don't know who I am because I don't want to be egotistical. And right. then we become self-obsessed in a really pathological way.
Which is egotistical.
Yes.
And so, yeah, if you struggle with self-hatred, we are not saying you're evil. We are saying that's a wound.
We're saying that that doesn't make you a better person.
Yeah, hating yourself won't make you better. It won't help anyone, including you. And, you know, when shit has happened to you and you are traumatized, you need to be cared for. You need to be healed. And you deserve that. So narcissism is not the only side effect of a fucked up ego.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Sidebar over.
That was a delicious sidebar. I liked that. Thank you.
It was like a candy bar.
Callie and I are recording in person today, and we have such different energy when we get to be in the same room. It's really playful. It's nice.
It's so fun. And yeah. like, I'm so glad that post-vaccine world is in my life, you know?
Same, love same.
Seeing my people. It's, fuck, it's overwhelming too.
I mean, yes.
Not this, not you. You've, no. I could probably poop in front of you. Like, I love you that much, you know?
So for our final segment, we'll be pooping in front of each other back and forth forever. I love this episode. This is so fun. All right. So to close us up, I want to read another excerpt that mm-hmm. I don't think I told you I was bringing, but this is about making connection between mental health and tarot grids. Okay. Mm-hmm. So something that I'm often doing with folks who are in recovery from traumatic childhoods, or even just the trauma of everyday life, which is a book on my shelf. It's a book, Trauma of Everyday Life. When Callie saw it, she was like, damn, Amber, get some new books. This is dark. anyway, so one of the things that I help folks do is write a trauma narrative. Mm-hmm. You can see this in a lot of different kinds of therapies, trauma-focused CBT, TFCBT. You do trauma narratives. You do trauma narratives in...
R-E-S-P-E-C-T?
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Show you what it means to me. Yes, trauma narratives in all acronyms of psychotherapy are present. Well, not all of them, but the good ones. So let me read a little bit about trauma narratives, okay? Mm-hmm. The process of creating the narrative itself helps the client process and reframe their memories. Repeatedly telling the story makes the memories more manageable and helps to diminish the associated painful responses. Trauma survivors also benefit from telling their stories because it helps them understand their reactions so they can move more effectively through the world and manage them. It also gives people hope, which tends to reduce the withdrawal from isolation behaviors that are common with trauma. Additionally, this treatment provides continued support by people who listen to the story without judgment, including their therapist and loved ones. Through the repeated telling of the trauma story, the survivor gains the valuable perspective that the trauma is in the past and they have the power to move forward.
That is what I do with my therapist.
Yeah.
So, and I'm connecting the dots about why it's so validating right now and how it is tarot. The form of therapy that I do for my complex PTSD is called...
lifespan integration.
That's the one. And basically you write out every memory that you can think of that feel either like in a year where you don't have a lot of memories, like when you're four, so you have one memory, or big memories, big good, big bad. And you make an entire timeline of your life, and your therapist like goes through and reads that list to you over and over and over again. And as you were talking about, you know, the person who's experienced the trauma telling their story over and over again to take away the sting. Mm-hmm. What I realized is that the reason that it works for me to have my therapist tell me the story of my life is that one of my trauma pieces was being super gaslit for, you know, 20 years. And so hearing somebody else just say it out loud affirms over and over and over that my truth is real outside of my body.
Mm-hmm.
And with tarot, inherently, you're going to see yourself reflected in the cards. It is constantly telling you that your narrative is true.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you know what card I pulled for today's episode?
What?
Not in our episode, yeah, but before you got to my house, I pulled the Chariot.
Oh, that's such a vibe for this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we are going to continue the conversation, but as always, we're taking it over to our dearly beloved patrons.
We are going to be doing a tarot deep dive. We're going to talk about our favorite cards and why we think they will be your favorites too, why they can give you some really valuable insight.
And we're also going to be checking in about our creative processes, because both of us have big projects going on and we've got some secret things that we're only going to talk about with the coven. So if you want to hear those, join us on Patreon at the Witch tier or above. Or if you just want to join at the $3 level, then you get about one bonus episode a month. Maybe this will be that episode. Who knows? Go check it out. And to wrap up, we want to share our most recent review.
We got two new reviews. They're so sweet. We love them. The first one I'm going to read is called Absolutely Beautiful and Inspiring by Bexley. Bexley.
If you say it quiet, it's always right.
Bexley. I can't. Every time. It's like I can't speak when I get to the username of whoever left a fucking review. This podcast is a blessing. I love that there's like period. It's the coven I've always yearned for, yet didn't know I needed.
Oh.
I know. Integrating mental health and a pagan practice has been monumental to my spiritual progression. Same. And those two beings have brought me closer to my divine self through their thoughtful, educated, and curious understanding of the mystic and the mind. So much love to you guys. Thank you for this gem.
Thank you.
I'm cry.
Yeah. Oh my God. We love you so much. All of you. And,
thank you.
There is another new one and it's titled, I Wish I Could Literally Carry Y'all in My Pocket. And it's by For the Love of Hugs.
See, that's easier to pronounce.
For the love of hugs. y'all are my favorite! Exclamation points in between every single word. In so many ways. I treasure the bits of wisdom you share here and the conversations I've been able to have with you through Instagram. Love being a patron of you too. Take all my stars. And then there are 5-star emojis underneath their 5-star rating.
So precious.
That's true. And we really do respond to every single DM we get on Instagram. So if you just are craving to tell us your thoughts, send them.
Yeah. We just got a really sweet message from someone commenting about the Selkie episode, which P.S. I still, just in the middle of the day, I'll remember that there's a podcast episode about my childhood trauma and I'll just like die a little death. So every time we get a feedback about that, I'm like, oh, thank you. Yes. That's out there. Thank you.
It's so validating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's validating. It builds safety, builds relationship. We need that.
It's true. And truly, the number one way to support this podcast is just to rate and review us. It helps us so, so much. So please, if you're like, maybe I left a review, go double check, babe. We love you. We want to hear it. We want the world to see that our show is worth listening to, because we do this from nothing but our own hearts, blood, sweat, and tears, and our couches. So
yeah,
we will see you on Patreon. Until next week, brooms up, witches. Yeah.